Who gives the right assessment of Job's character? Job himself, his friends, or God? Welcome to The Good Word. I'm Alden Thompson, your host and study guide author on the Book of Job. My conversation partners are again Dave Thomas, Dean of the Walla Walla University School of Theology, and Jen Ogden, Associate Pastor of the Walla Walla University Church. Let's take a look at Job's character. That's our theme for today. Who has it right? Job, his friends, or God?
Well, I don't think Job and God are vastly different in their assessments of Job. I think the friends are on the wrong side.
Yep. I think we can put the friends in a category by themselves.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then the question is, you know, how close are Job and God? Now, God calls Job a blameless man at the beginning, so he gets an absolutely clean slate at the beginning. Then the next question is there anything that happens during Job's trials that would have changed God's assessment of Job?
I think a lot happened, but I don't think that his character changes in the midst of his circumstances.
See, this is the thing I like the most about Job, Alden, is that he faces enormous adversity while being an acknowledged righteous man. His wife tells him to revile God. His friends come and offer explanations how to fix the circumstance. And through all of that, he persists in his determination to follow God until God vindicates him. And that, I think, is the beauty of this book. So I think his assessment and God's assessment, I don't think there's anything that he does that changes God's assessment of him.
You know, when I teach Job in class and have my students read the whole book, I have one of the best and nastiest assignments I've ever brewed up. It comes from the epilogue. If you take a look at the epilogue, where God comes back to talk to his friends. Verse 7, after the Lord had said these things to Job, he said to Eliphaz the Temanite, I am angry with you and your two friends, because you have not spoken the truth about me as my servant Job has. So now, take 7 bulls, 7 rams, and go to my servant Job and sacrifice a burnt offering for yourselves. My servant Job will pray for you. I will accept the prayer and not deal with you according to your folly. You have not spoken the truth about me as my servant Job has. Mm-hmm. So Eliphaz the Temanite, Bildad the Shuhite, and Zophar the Naamathite did what the Lord told them, and the Lord accepted Job's prayer. In chapter 42, we have the first part of 42, we have Job's response to God. And I think we need to hear that. After this voice out of the whirlwind, Job says, you know that I can do all things. I know that you can do all things. No purpose of yours can be thwarted. You asked, who is this that obscures my plans without knowledge? Surely I spoke things I did not understand, things too wonderful to know, for me to know. You said, listen now, and I will speak. I will question you, and you shall answer me. My ears had heard of you, but now my eyes have seen you. Therefore I despise myself and repent in dust and ashes.
Job speaking.
Mm-hmm. This is Job. Mm-hmm. I repent in dust and ashes. So my threefold question is, what did Job's friends say that was wrong? What did Job say that was true? And the third question is, what did Job repent of? Mm. And I would like to toss that last question back to you, good folks, and see what you might come up with. What did Job repent of?
Well, he asked questions about that which he didn't know. Isn't that what he said? What was the phrase?
Yep. I uttered what I did not understand.
Yeah, understand, not know.
Mm-hmm. So he confesses a lack of knowledge.
No, a lack of understanding.
Thank you. Lack of understanding. I mean, that's what he confesses. That's the only thing that he says. He's
in other words, it seems like that he has dashed into finding explanations for this thing when he should have just kept walking with God.
Mm-hmm. Mm. You know, I don't know whether this works, but I've I've wondered if you've ever had suspicions about a friend. Probably works better for a friend. And you begin to think really nasty thoughts about your friend. And then there comes a point where you receive additional information that all of a sudden casts the story entirely differently. And when that happens, you repent. And your friend says, I understand. Without that additional information?
That's a great illustration, you know. I, the closest I can come to that, Alden, is I've been in situations where I have known things that I couldn't say publicly that, were it known, would have changed people's perceptions, but because of confidences, I couldn't say them. And I sometimes have had to take my lumps, allowing certain perceptions to prevail, even about me, which I could have debunked very quickly had I divulged the confidence. And so I'm not quite sure how that fits in the picture here,
I think if we go back, and I'd like to take another look at Job's ethics. We've got the list here because this is his statement. To defend yourself at the cost of someone else is really quite wrong. And, of course, it's simply an application to every aspect of life of Jesus' great command. Second great command, treat others the way you'd want to be treated. This is the law and the prophets. So let's take a fresh look. We did this briefly a while back. Verse 1. In chapter 31, this is the great statement of ethics, probably the finest statement of ethics, you know, according to the Old Testament prof.
And notice these are not ideas, these are actions. These are things he has done, not just
this
what he's
talking
about.
This is where he can say, look at my life.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
This is, I have fulfilled these ideals in my life. He vows not to look lustfully at a young woman. I think some translations use virgin. See? Now, the Old Testament is a male chauvinistic book. Some have actually said, if you take the command, thou shalt not commit adultery, its narrowest definition, that refers to a woman's relationship to her own marriage and a man's relationship to someone else's marriage. Adultery, in its narrowest sense, applies only to a marriage woman's marriage vows. See, that's why men can play around. But Job goes that extra mile here. And he says, I have not looked at a virgin, see, not looked at a young woman. And he's not walked with falsehood or hurried after deceit. He's been honest. He's not been enticed by a woman. He has not lurked at my neighbor's door. My guess is that lurking at the neighbor's door probably has sexual connotations as well. Again, he has been faithful to his commitment. Not just a monotheistic, but one husband, one wife perspective, which is unusual for the Old Testament. He's not denied justice to any of my servants. That is an interesting one. For a man of wealth to be able to say, my servants have been treated right in my house, met the needs of the poor, the widow, the fatherless, the naked. In the Old Testament, that's one of the best things that you could say about a good king. He is defended the helpless members, the vulnerable members of the culture. And this is what Job says, that's what I've done. He has not used his influence in court to testify against the fatherless. He's not relied on wealth or gold. He's not allowed himself to be enticed by the worship of sun or moon, so he gets a religious element in there as well. He's not rejoiced at his enemy's misfortune or pronounced a curse against him. You ought to read some of the Psalms. The psalmist can't do as good there. The psalmist really gets cranked up. He's never let the members of his household go hungry. He's not allowed the stranger or traveler to remain in the street. He has never concealed his sins for the fear of contempt of the people. So he's not just worried about reputation. He's been honest, straightforward. He's been a faithful steward of his land and supported his tenants. That is an amazing documentation of this man that we have.
And it is not one that God ever refutes. In fact, no. God affirms that this claim of Job is true.
Yeah, he's lived it out, and that's why he could say, a man who's blameless. And in spite of all the things that the friends said to him. That's not the case. Now, as we look at that today, what role might this chapter have for us as we teach our students, as we live before them?
Well, I would say one thing is that ethics is not a matter of debating hypothetical points. It's a matter of living. Mm-hmm. You know, it has to translate into actually doing something. And it's not just raising awareness. I hear a lot of people saying, well, we're going to raise awareness about, the homeless, or we're going to raise awareness about whatever. Raising awareness is not really doing anything. You haven't fed anybody. You haven't clothed them. You haven't sheltered them. And so that's one point I would make, is we ought to learn from this that theory and practice have to go together,
mm-hmm.
for it to be ethical.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it's very interesting when you compare the parable of the judgment in the New Testament. You know, it's not for the evil deeds that they've done. It's for the good deeds that they have neglected to do. And this list is full of good deeds, things that they've actually done.
Mm-hmm. So God affirms Job and exonerates him, right?
Yep. He does.
So all is well.
All is well. All we have to do now is learn how to ask the right questions at the right time and to be able to ventilate our anger in the right way.
And to consistently and persistently live an ethical life.
That's right.
That's it. That's it.
That's all you need.
Piece of cake.
Right? Piece of cake. A piece of cake without sugar, so it's healthful. Well, Job is such an amazing, it's such a complex book, you know, and when I ask those three questions of my students, you know, what did Job repent of? What did the friend say that was not true? And what did Job say that was true? I think that's a marvelous thing. And I had one student once who really got angry at the book of Job. And I said, what would you happen if your daughter didn't do what you asked her to do? I'd beat her. So that was a very crucial insight. Thank you very much, Jen and Dave. We have just one more lesson for this quarter, and it's going to be some lessons from Job. Thank you for your participation. Thank you to Jared for being our program engineer, and to all of you for listening in. I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.